Hello, my name is Brent Dundor. I am cisgendered and I use he, him, his pronouns. I'm a commercial and celebrity photographer, fine artist and activist, and I'm also the proud producer of the They Them Project. They Them Project interviews non-binary individuals, offering a platform for them to be seen and heard while informing and educating everyone on how words and actions affect the trans plus community. Hey all, this is my first time doing anything through radio, so I'm a little nervous and also really excited. First off, happy Pride to everyone listening. Before I get to all of that, I'd like to tell you the short version of my own story and what led me, a cis-identifying person, to produce a project highlighting non-binary people. I do photography full-time. I run my headshot and portrait studio in South Minneapolis called BD Portraits, and I separate that from my freelance work that I label Brent Dundor Photography. Brent Dundor Photography is where I've had the pleasure of working with commercial clients, ad agencies, celebrities, and also where I do specific projects for my fine artwork and activism, which includes the They Them Project. So how does a photographer become an activist? Well, I started my photo business in high school. And after graduating, I moved to California to get my degree in professional photography and advertising, simply because I wanted to be the best photographer I could. After college, I moved to Los Angeles just to go head on into the LA photo industry. I got lucky and I started working with celebrities and other big clients. But even with that success that I gained, I realized quickly I just didn't want to make LA home for the rest of my life. Before I packed my bags to come back to the Twin Cities, I witnessed California granting equal marriage rights to same-sex couples. But then, not soon after, the entire state voted yes on an amendment to the Constitution saying marriage would once again be between only a man and a woman. This was devastating to me. And every chance I could, I joined thousands of people marching in the streets of LA to protest. One thing led to another, and I started taking those protests pretty seriously. I would run to the front of the action, and at one point, I remember screaming in the faces of police with helicopters flying overhead. I felt connected with the people I was protesting with, but no matter how loud I screamed, I felt like my voice just wasn't being heard. When the time came to move back to Minnesota, I found out that the same type of hateful marriage amendment was about to be voted on here. And this time, there was no way I was going to sit back and watch it all take place. I needed to do something, so I decided to use my skill and passion and put it into action. No matter what it took, I was going to help people's voices be heard. One thing led to another, and I created a photo campaign in conjunction with the Twin Cities Gay Men's Chorus and Minnesota United for All Families called the Marry Us Campaign. I went to any public place that would allow me in their doors to take portraits of people showing support for marriage equality. I'd take photos of people, and then they could post it to social media and start a conversation telling others why marriage equality was important to them and would affect them or someone they knew personally. I'm proud to say that Minnesota became the first state to vote down the hateful marriage amendment bill. And then soon after, the United States Supreme Court voted on making marriage legal to same-sex couples throughout the nation. I felt as though my activist work through that movement was done, but I knew I still wanted to help marginalized groups be heard. I created other campaigns over the next bunch of years, most of which you can see on my website. But again, I mention all of this to tell you my story of what led me to becoming an activist. The reason that I take this project personally and seriously is because I can understand what it feels like to not be able to have a voice and to be heard. So now I'll tell you all about They Them Project and what led me as an activist to working with this project. About 5 years ago, my husband and I were planning for our wedding, and my aunt came to us and asked if she could invite someone to our big day. She went on to say that she also wanted to ask some questions about details she had heard about the person she wanted to invite. The guest was the child of my aunt's best friend from college. My aunt found out that her friend's child was transgender, and my aunt wanted to invite them, knowing that they would have fun at the wedding, and of course, they would be welcomed by all. Now, to really put into perspective how that conversation went between my aunt and myself, I'm going to use the actual language that was stated that day. Realize that I do this to give example of what I once believed and how my language has also changed a lot since then. My aunt said that her friend's daughter was transitioning, that she wasn't asking to be accepted as a man, but she wanted people to use different pronouns for her. And those pronouns were really confusing for my aunt, enough that she couldn't really even remember them. She said it was something like they or we or the, or maybe it was them. This was the first time I had ever heard about they-them pronouns or anyone using any gender other than male or female. My response to my aunt was one that I'm honestly not proud of today. I told her that I didn't understand what she was talking about. I personally did believe that someone could be identifying one sex at birth and that their sex that they feel on the inside could be different. But you had to choose between being a man and a woman. You can't just make up new pronouns and expect the world to change. I'm sure this is something that people who are non-binary and transgender have heard all the time. I was lucky enough to have my husband next to me, and he heard me make this statement and became really upset with me, saying, "I cannot believe you just said that. You have had challenges with your sexuality throughout your whole life. How on earth can you judge someone and think that you know them better than what they do?" It was in that moment that I realized I was ignorant and I had to change the way I thought about gender. I also realized I had to put the work into educating myself because it wasn't anybody else's responsibility to do so. So I decided to start another campaign, one where I would show the world my process of trying to learn about trans and non-binary individuals. I invited several people I knew from Facebook to come get a free photo and help me figure out what I wanted to do visually. Lucky enough, some people said yes. When the first subject came into my studio, I asked if it would be okay for me to personally ask them questions about their journey to using they-them pronouns. They said it was cool, so I made coffee in my kitchen and we ended up sitting there for probably 30 or 45 minutes and we had a wonderful talk and I learned so much. And honestly, to this day, I'm so grateful that they let me do that. In the end, I was really pleased with the shots we got as well. So I asked another person to come into the studio to be photographed. That person came in, and once again, I asked if I could ask questions about their gender. And they told me it was okay. But when I went to go grab coffee this time, a light bulb turned on in my head. These questions that I was about to ask this person were the same questions that other people wanted to ask others as well. So why not record it in case I could use this footage to help people somehow? I grabbed my camera, I threw it on a tripod, and I hit record. And this was the moment that the project was born. Now, to slingshot a bit from the start of the project to now, over the last year, They Them Project has gone through a lot of changes. First, I wanted to take the series of photographs and maybe ask people to write out answers to questions and include those with the images somehow. And then I started recording the questions I was asking, and those questions became interviews. The interviews were lasting for over 30 or 60 minutes, and I realized more and more that all of the conversation was important. Over time, I also started to realize that people through social media did not want to watch a video for more than 1 or 2 minutes, and that younger generations don't even want to watch something for more than 20 seconds. This meant that I had to edit down the interviews, cutting out the majority of what someone felt was important enough to bring up, and I needed a solution to that problem. And that brought me podcasts. With podcasts, people like you can listen while at work, driving, gardening, anywhere and anytime. You can take in a full interview and learn about gender. But then what about the photos that I've been taking for the project? I knew from the beginning that if I took images of each person in a unique style, it would become the one part of this project that would be consistent and pull people in. Sooner or later, I knew the time was right for me to use those images and create a gallery of the project. So I asked Lush, a bar here in Minneapolis, which has done amazing things for the community, if they would be willing to host the gallery. They said they loved the idea, and even offered to have an opening event for it all. Like the rest of this project, I ended up putting a lot of effort into that event. There were roughly 20 nonprofit organizations that I contacted and that came that evening. We raised money for 2 trans-specific nonprofit organizations, and I also got an amazing guest speaker for the evening who was none other than Minneapolis's 4th Ward Councilmember Philippe Cunningham, who happens to be the first trans male person of color elected to political office in the U.S. The place was absolutely packed. People were shoulder to shoulder at some points, and you could feel the love. I told people leading up to the event that I didn't care one bit if someone came up to me and told me that my photographs were pretty. I wanted to see youth and I wanted to see families walking around and looking at the photos, meeting people from the project and the community, and for everyone to feel accepted and loved. I needed that night to be special for gender non-conforming people, highlighting them and celebrating them. Since that opening, I have been contacted by a lot of organizations asking if I could do a gallery. My answer is always yes. You can find out about the upcoming events through the They Them Project Facebook page. So now, before I end my portion here about the project and myself, I would like to end by answering some questions that I am asked about the project all of the time. To start, are you still interviewing people for this project? Yep, still interviewing people, and I don't see this project going away or sunsetting anytime soon. Another question is, where is the project headed? Well, I've been lucky enough to highlight a ton of individuals from here in the Twin Cities, some of which I feel are icons for this community and our whole state. I now hope to take the project beyond Minnesota, and I've already started that process, interviewing several people in California, and I have plans to work with some amazing individuals in New York as well. I hope that the traveling aspect can become a regular thing, because I feel that the whole country deserves this project. And it's a good thing to showcase different communities. If anyone has means or experience gaining funding for a project such as this, please reach out to me through the website to help me make this possible. Another question I get asked a lot is, what have I learned from doing this project? I honestly hesitate to answer this question because I feel like most of the time it's people wanting cliff notes to change their outlook on this subject. And a huge thing that I'm constantly advocating is that you have to take the time to learn and change. If you listen to the interviews, each time I'm learning something new, I've strived to be honest, and during that time, I reference those things as they come up. Ultimately, listening to the interviews is how people will learn, but if I had to choose one thing that I feel is the biggest lesson that people need to take away from this project, it's that it is a good thing to ask people their pronouns. It shows that you care enough about someone and that you want to respect them while interacting with them. As a matter of fact, it's the first question that I ask in every single interview just to make sure that people hear it. I ask, would there ever be a time that you would be upset if someone asked you what pronouns you use? And for non-binary people from the group, the answer has been an astounding no. And almost always, it puts a smile on people's face because they think about the idea of people coming to them to do this regularly. Another question I get asked constantly is how someone can help the project. Well, I have spent hundreds of hours putting together this website, and it gives every one of you the opportunity to support and inform others. And I made it as easy as simply clicking a button. The best way to help the cause and to show support for the project and the people that are sharing their beautiful stories with you is to simply share the project and give a short message telling others why they too should follow the project and listen to the interviews. Okay, so for the rest of this program, you're going to hear less of me, which if you're not ready to, I am. I'm going to play portions of two recent interviews, one with Minnesota Council member Philippe Cunningham, who I had spoke about before, and the other was one of my interviews that I had in California recently, author, producer, and performer Jacob Tobia. I promise you do not want to miss these interviews through this program, but don't forget, you can listen to all of the interviews, including these two in their entirety, through theythemproject.org. My one and only shameless promotion here is that if you are listening to this and you or someone you know is in need of professional photos, please check out my work at bdportraits.com. I'm doing this project 100% out of my own time and through my own budget. So the best way you can support me as a producer for this project is to consider me for your next photo needs. Thank you again, KFAI, for giving me the opportunity to showcase this project and all the beautiful, amazing people I'm honored to have the chance to interview. Happy Pride, folks. Hello, my name is Brent Dundor. I'm a full-time commercial photographer, artist and activist, and the proud producer of the They Them Project. They Them Project interviews non-binary individuals, offering a platform for them to be seen and heard while informing and educating everyone on how words and actions affect the trans plus community. Today, I'm honored to have a very special guest for the They Them Project podcast, Councilmember Philippe Cunningham, who is the 4th Ward City Council member representing Minneapolis's most diverse community, North Minneapolis. Philippe was elected in 2017 after unseating a 20-year incumbent council president, and he's also the first transgender man of color ever elected to office in the United States. Philippe, thank you so much for giving me your time today. My name is Brent Dundor. I use he, him, his pronouns.
Thank you for having me today. I greatly appreciate it. My name is Philippe, and I use he, him pronouns as well.
Okay. Before jumping into the questions I have for you, I now like to start each interview explaining that I started this project to challenge my own ignorance and educate myself on gender. So today, I feel the need to also mention that my goal with this particular interview is entirely to understand your own discovery and journey with your gender. So I apologize if you came here excited to answer all sorts of political questions. You probably get enough of that already.
it's quite my jam. So, and I'm happy to tell my story so folks are able to perhaps see themselves reflected in conversation elsewhere.
So. For those who weren't able to make it to the opening gallery for the They Them Project that happened at Lush about 2 months ago, I could tell many people came to hear our guest speaker for the evening, who just so happens to be you, Philippe. Thank you for coming that night.
Of course. I was so honored to be there. And my husband and I were both there. And when we walked through the door, we were just like stunned by how packed that space was. Like, it was hard to get from one side of the room to the other. Uh-huh. So it was really fantastic to see so many folks turn out for that event. So
can you mention a little bit more about what that night was like for you?
Yeah, well, one of the things that I think that I had not been totally prepared for was the emotional release that I would feel, I guess, with being in that space, because as I had mentioned there, that I have made the choice, as I have stepped into onto the life path that I have decided to take, that I had to simplify my gender identity for mass consumption. So it's easiest just to say, quote unquote, easiest to say that I'm black, queer, trans man. Like, that's just easy, straightforward. And then it was like, as I was prepping to walk up and talk, I just had this moment where I was like, oh, I can actually like say my full gender identity in this space and people will understand that. And so for me to be able to stand up in front of a very packed room of folks and be able to say, well, actually I identify as a black, queer, trans masculine, gender nonconforming femme, people are like, how about it? And I'm like, but if I was to say that anywhere else, people would look at me probably like, I'm just going to leave that alone and just not understand it. So it was really great to be able to have that space as well. So that's personally, but then, you know, on a larger scale, it was just amazing to see not only gender, but also how race played into that, because it's also a very diverse set of folks who have been participating in this project. And so it adds that layer of intersectionality. So to be there in that nuanced space like that, it was just kind of like, thanks, y'all. Thanks for putting this together.
Yeah. So that was my intro, kind of connecting the project and how you have been involved in the past. If you're ready, we'll just start with like the regular questions. And again, if you have any comments in between at all, then please just, we'll make this more of a conversation.
Yeah.
All right. Would there ever be a time that you would be upset if someone asked you what pronouns you use?
No. I really actually appreciate when people ask me what pronouns I use, because that shows me that that person's being intentional about respecting my gender identity. One of the things that I really appreciate is that my policy associate in my office, he actually uses they pronouns with everyone unless he knows for sure what gender identity or pronoun that the pronouns that person uses. And so and I just, like, every time that happens, I always just feel like this like little spark of gratitude, because it's showing intentionality, it's showing respect, and to me, it's just like, I'm taking time to see you and say, like, I want to respect you. How would you like for me to best do so?
How much responsibility do you think should be put on others to ask people's pronouns or for you? Or
I would say that it is the responsibility of cisgender folks and trans folks who identify on the binary to understand why gender neutral pronouns matter and why they should be respected. I have heard in some trans binary spaces where folks do not hold respect for non-binary folks and non-binary folks' pronouns. And so, so it's not just cis folks who need to be more intentional about understanding pronouns and being respectful of pronouns. I think it's a both and. I think that it's the responsibility of folks to better understand pronouns and get comfortable with saying they and them. I think that that's the biggest part, is just getting comfortable with doing it. I find myself constantly correcting people, like they, you know, like that's what those people do, like they. And so I think it's just like a matter of getting used to it. And I think that also as gender nonconforming folks, like myself identified, although my gender pronouns sometimes, I primarily use he, him, but you know, I think that there is, it's also helpful to name that in spaces. So, you know, like naming that in introductions, because that helps me to be able to correct people, you know, like, so if somebody says like, hey, my name is Tina and I go by they, them, then for the rest of the meeting, I know that I get to correct people, you know, like I'm happy to do so. And then, you know, if there's like name tags, like writing they, them on it, so we can see each other, that it helps me be more defensive, you know, like, and protective of that person as well. So I would say for the most part, by identifying like someone who uses they, them pronouns, that like, that's actually like the end of their responsibility. Like and that's why, you know, I say like, it's easier for me to be able to kind of like be on the defense, is because like, I want to make sure that like, they don't have to constantly correct people. Right. Like that's emotional labor that I would like to take off of somebody's shoulders, as much as possible. And I know that I'm not the only person in spaces who feel that way. Yeah. So I just wanted to name that particular component of it.
No, I appreciate it, because people from the project, there are people who say, well, it is my responsibility to bring that up. There's people in the project that say it's not their responsibility, but for the people that say it is my responsibility, they understand that once they claim that, then it's other people's responsibility.
Yeah, right. That's from my perspective of the way that I feel like I can be most protective of, you know, my non-binary siblings, is to be able to like see folks. And I also though have to say to folks who are unsure, if you are not sure, ask someone's pronouns. What pronouns would you like for me to use? If that person gets offended because you ask that question, please do not take that personally. It is not about you. It is about that person's own story and about their relationship to pronouns. A vast majority of trans and gender nonconforming folks will be greatly appreciative that you even took the time to ask. It's hard to try something socially, like a new social norm, right? Like, I don't want to offend this person because what if like they're not trans or whatever?
Especially in Minnesota.
Right. Like, I really don't want to offend somebody. And, but ultimately, like that person, like you cannot take someone else's response personally, because it's again about that person's story and their own relationship to pronouns, and long before you ask that question. But ultimately, you know, taking a step back and looking at the big picture rather than the, you know, looking at the forest rather than the trees individually, you know, it's it is a much better bet to just go ahead and ask.
Mm-hmm. The last person that was here, their name was Merritt. And Merritt just said, if I correct you, I'm not upset. Yeah. And the amount of work that it takes to then say, listen, it's okay.
Yeah.
I'm not mad at you.
Yeah. Like, it's so much emotional labor to hold all of that.
So it's important for people to understand that mistakes will happen.
Yes.
And to move on, like to understand what it means to somebody and then move on.
Yeah.
Away from pronouns, how do you define and describe yourself and your gender?
Yeah, so if you catch me on most days, I'm a Black queer trans man. On some days, depending on who I'm talking to and they understand, then I identify myself as a Black queer transmasculine gender nonconforming femme.
All right, and I want to go through it. In my own head, I want to go through all of that to make sure.
Yes.
A gender nonconforming femme man. Is that what you said? Nope. Femme?
Yeah, just femme.
Okay.
So, Black and queer, transmasculine. So, identifying center of masculine on the gender spectrum. And then gender nonconforming femme, because I identify very strongly with my femme identity. But obviously, like, I don't fit into femme, like the constructs of what a femme is. And so, but my femme identity is very like central to my identity overall. But, you know, when I simplify it, it's like, I feel like that's kind of tucked into the queer piece, you know, like I still feel my full and authentic self, regardless of what labels. It's just one is semi easier for people to understand. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Again, I always try to kind of step back from where what I've learned from the project.
Yeah.
I always try to step back so that people who might be just starting in their education of it all, that they can understand each piece of this.
Yeah.
Can you tell me more about your journey to using he, him, his pronouns or all the pronouns along the way? When was the first time that you started questioning your gender?
Well, I think like a lot of other trans folks, you know, I kind of have that textbook like when I was a kid and, you know, little kid. And I remember very distinctly saying that I wanted to grow up and be a boy and that I wanted to have a big muscly body like my dad. And, you know, and my mom said, you know, well, honey, it doesn't really work like that. And I said, okay. And essentially that was basically the end of that conversation for about 20 years. Cause I was a good kid and was like, okay, well, things don't work that way. Got it. and then just never fully thought about it again, because sexual orientation and gender identity are complicated. Especially when those two things can, overlap in way unexpected ways, at least from my part of the journey. It was kind of like, but it was appealing, the onion process. But truly though, it was like a light bulb moment. I was in a gay American history class at DePaul University, and to fulfill the requirement. And so I took a gay American history class. We broke it down per topic and unit, and I took gay transgender people, because I thought that I was like, I know that gay trans people exist, but I kind of don't like get it. Uh-huh. And like would like to be able to better understand this demographic of folks. So then I read the story of Lou Sullivan, a trans man in San Francisco in the 80s and 90s during the AIDS epidemic, who was an activist. He ended up dying during the AIDS epidemic. I read his story. I like closed the book. I pushed the book away and I was like, Oh my God, I'm a gay man. It was like this like light bulb turned on. And then it was like less than 2 weeks later, I came out. It was pretty quick. Like, it was like once that light bulb turned on, like there was no turning it back off. And so it happened very quickly.
Can you give an example of a time when someone challenged your gender and how it made you feel?
Yeah, well, I mean, honestly, like, the first thing that came to mind is when I had, like, a small group of trans women gang up on me and tell me that I wasn't actually trans because I dated men. That was particularly challenging because I transitioned in when I lived in, well, I didn't necessarily always live there, but in Boy, when I worked in Boys Town, I worked in nightlife. It was particularly heartbreaking because I pretty much kind of like transitioned in like the drag scene. And these trans women were a part of the drag scene. And so it was the beginning of recognizing how much animosity there was towards me as somebody who didn't quite fit into the sort of traditional understanding of transgender and what that means. Like, I didn't transition into like some beefcake straight dude. And so they're like, no, you're not actually trans. Like, it was very, like, their thinking was very binary. And so that was very heartbreaking for me.
Can you give an example of a time when someone validated your gender and how it made you feel?
My mom had a really hard time with my transition. Very, very hard time. When it came for me, time for me to get top surgery, I was going to fly to Florida because that's where a well-known surgeon is. So I was going down there, and the folks who were going to help me, like my dad was originally going to go and help. And then like somebody else was going to originally go and help me after surgery. But it all fell through. And so my mom was like, of course I'm going to go. Like, I'm not going to like let you go down there and hope for the best with strangers. And then we were on the plane there, and I think she was kind of like having her come to Jesus moment of like, okay, like this is for real, for real, for real. And she was just like, you know, now I look back at you as a child, and, you know, I'm like, he really liked RuPaul, and like, he really liked boas and was really feminine. And she's like, and, you know, I thought I had a daughter, but now I realize that I had a gay son this whole time. And like, that was a really, really big deal, because after that, like, she was just like, she stuck by me like ever since then. She defends, you know, people misgender me still in my hometown or things like that. My mom is like the first to correct them. So, yay.
I appreciate that story. Thanks for telling that.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
If someone's having a hard time remembering, understanding, or respecting another person's pronouns, their name, their gender, what suggestions do you have for the person who wants to be able to do this and is willing to put in the work?
Genuinely apologize when you mess up, and don't take it personally if somebody snaps at you. Like, again, it is gender, like gender pronouns and birth names carry so much charge, so much history, so much baggage and trauma, that folks cannot take it personally if somebody gets upset with them for messing up. Still apologize genuinely. Please take on the emotional labor, you know, of like, oh, you just charged me and I'm having big feelings about that. It's like, well, let me hold that, and I apologize. I recognize that I messed up or whatever, and I promise I'll do better moving forward. I would say maybe like practice saying they, them.
What advice would you give to your younger self or to youth who might be questioning their gender identity?
I would say that you're not alone. The first thing is that you're not alone, even though everyone immediately around you might not either have your back, be down with it, you know, whatever the case may be, that that you're still not alone, and that you're actually, and this is really in particular, like, just because other people can't see your magic doesn't mean it's not there. Just because people can't see how special you are doesn't mean that you're not special. It just means that they don't have the capacity to be able to see your magic or to see how special you are. So keep living in that and have compassion for yourself, for the feelings and emotions and struggle, but to have patience as you work through those challenges. So
I love that word magic.
Yeah. Honestly, I feel like trans folks are magic and gender non-conforming folks are magic. I have experienced two lifetimes in one already, kind of three for a little bit if you get the more non-binary space. And so I've lived multiple lives in one. So
what advice do you have for parents who may have children who are questioning their gender identity?
Prepare for big emotions, because it's really confusing and it's definitely a process. Find other parents, find other people to be in conversation with. Take care of yourself, because it's kind of like that mask on the airplane. Like, you got to take care of yourself before you can take care of somebody else. And this can be really taxing and challenging. It's okay to mourn the loss of who you thought your child was without feeling guilty about that, as long as you keep moving through it. But again, going back to self, having some compassion for yourself, and not feeling guilty in the process, but being committed to being there. Both my mom and I, we talk from time to time. It's just like how heartbreaking it is for parents who disown their trans or queer kids. It's just like, that's not unconditional love. Mm-hmm. Why did you have a child if you're not actually going to love that child no matter what? Mm-hmm. And so,
well, again, there's just little pieces where it's like, oh, I haven't heard that yet. And it pushes perspective for me. And when you say the idea of mourning the loss, like, that really puts you into a place of like, and again, you said that that's acceptable as long as you're pushing through it for your kid.
Yeah.
But that idea, like, that you're moving on to something else, yeah. You know?
Yeah. My mom had to mourn the loss of her daughter and her identity of being the mother to a daughter. Like, that was a huge part of her identity. And so I had to give her space and grace to be able to go through that process. She transitioned with me.
Uh-huh. Is there anything else you would like to say to anyone listening?
I would just say that gender is complicated and be committed to questioning your reality about everything that you know about gender, and move through that process. We don't have a mental model of what it means to be trans or gender nonconforming. We have a mental model for what it means to be gay. It's like, well, you just kind of like straight people, but you just switch out, right? It's like, but you don't really have anything like that for trans gender identities and gender nonconforming. And so to take the time to create a new mental model and understand, or if you don't have the time and energy to do that, to radically accept that you do not have to get something to respect it. Uh-huh. And also, I think it's really important to continue to spread information and education. And so I would definitely say for folks to be intentional about sharing this particular episode if they so feel that it has good information, the project in general. There is something really amazing in somebody taking the time to capture their learning process so that other folks can go through the learning process in a more structured, intentional way. And so, folks, please share this good stuff and make sure that folks are starting conversations and really investing in this project and the work that many of the participants are doing as well.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hello, my name is Brent Dundor. I identify as cisgendered and I use he, him, his pronouns. I'm a commercial photographer in Minneapolis, Minnesota, a fine artist and activist, and I'm also the proud producer of theythemproject.org. They Them Project interviews non-binary individuals, offering a platform for them to be seen and heard while informing and educating everyone on how words and actions affect the trans plus community.
Hi, my name is Brent Dundor. I'm the creator, photographer, and producer of the They Them Project. I identify as cisgendered and I use he, him, his pronouns.
Hi, I'm Jacob Tobia, and I identify as gender queer, gender fabulous, gender destroyer, and I use they, them pronouns.
Jacob, thank you so much for being here and for sharing your pronouns with me. For anyone listening who doesn't know Jacob Tobia, let me tell you a little bit about them so you can be as excited for this interview as I am. Jacob is a writer, producer, and author of the forthcoming memoir, Sissy. As a performer, visionary, and internet personality, they help others embrace the full complexity of gender and own their own truth, even when that truth is messy. Jacob served as the director's assistant and social media producer on season 4 of Amazon's Emmy award-winning series Transparent, and is now the new face of Fluid Beauty, a trans and queer inclusive makeup line. In 2015, Jacob was profiled by MTV in the one-hour episode of True Life, I'm Gender Queer. And in 2016, Jacob created and co-produced and hosted Queer 2.0, a first-of-its-kind LGBTQ series on NBC News. Jacob recently collaborated with Instagram and GLAAD to produce hashtag Kind Comments, a custom campaign for Trans Day of Visibility that was viewed over 14 million times. A member of both Forbes 30 Under 30 and Out 100, Jacob, I'm so happy that our schedules finally aligned.
Yeah, we've been trying to get together for like a straight up year.
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh, I'm going to be in LA. And I was like, oh shit, I'm going to be in New York. And it was like, oh, I'm going to be in LA. And I was like, oh crap, I'm home in North Carolina. And it's like, oh, I'm going to be in LA. It's like, I'm on another writing retreat.
Pretty much like finally, exactly this.
Right, like literally, it was like 3 times a disaster. But we finally worked it out.
And I was like, did I just contact you 2 weeks ago maybe for this?
Or, yes.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, our schedules persisted.
I can do it.
We did it. Proud of us.
So thus far, the Them Project has mostly taken place in Minnesota, where I live and run my photo studio, with the exception of a couple other interviews that actually did take place where we are today, here in Los Angeles. You said that you lived in North Carolina. That's where you're from, North?
Yeah, that's where I grew up.
Okay.
That's where I'm like from, you know?
Uh-huh. And New York City. Mm-hmm. But now you're living here in LA.
Yeah.
What do you think of this crazy city compared to all the others you've lived in?
I mean, I love LA, honestly, because I feel like the California chill is what makes the hustle of the entertainment industry manageable. You know what I mean? Like, there's an abundance of weed, there's an abundance of sunshine, there's an abundance of beaches. And I just feel like in New York, whenever I had like a free afternoon, I would be like, oh man, I'm messing up my scheduling. Oh crap, I need to be doing something. And in LA, when I have a free afternoon, I'm like,
you can go somewhere.
Yeah. I'm going to go sit on a beach, and like, I don't really go to the beach that often because traffic, but like hypothetically, I'm going to like metaphorically sit on a beach and like think about what I want to do next. You know, the thing I always think is important for me to say is that people have this misperception that I left North Carolina because of my queerness. And it's like, girl, I didn't leave North Carolina because I needed a place that was better to be queer. Like the Raleigh-Durham area in North Carolina is like, I mean, Durham could not be a better place to be like to live and breathe as a queer person. Like,
I never would have guessed.
It's incredible.
I've never been. So
yeah, like it's got this burgeoning activist community. It's like a badass like POC like hub. You know, there's like organizing and queer organizing is like so intersectional and wonderful. You know, I really loved living in North Carolina. And I feel like people have this idea that I left because like it was so repressive and I needed to find the freedom of New York City and Los Angeles. And I'm just like, I moved to New York City and Los Angeles because like you can't sell a TV show from North Carolina.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important to clarify that. That's why one of the reasons why I love your project so much is that you are shooting a majority of people like in Minnesota, where everyone's like, oh, like queer people don't exist anywhere other than the coasts. And it's like we're everywhere, idiot. Like, what the hell's wrong with you?
I haven't thought of that perspective before. So yeah. I like that.
I think it's so important because so much of what we see is just like this idea that queer people must escape to somewhere before we can like find communities that affirm us and love us. Mm-hmm. And like, while there are like, you know, while I'm not trying to say that like, that there aren't queer people in small towns in the South or in the Midwest or whatever who are struggling, right? Like there are also queer people in those places that are thriving and are accepted and loved by their communities.
Jacob, would there ever be a time you would be upset if someone asked you what pronouns you use?
No. I'm like, girl, just ask, but be chill about it. Like, don't be weird. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing I don't like about, I feel like the moment you start describing yourself as non-binary, everyone's like, oh, so you're like a fragile little porcelain vase. And I'm like, no, I'm like sturdy and hardy. It's like, you can just be chill with me. You don't have to be like, oh, so I just have this. it's just this quick question. I don't mean to impose. I don't want it to be this big deal, but I was just, for my own sake and for my own learning and curiosity, as trying to be a better ally. I just was wondering what pronouns you prefer to be addressed by as a person. I'm like, girl, don't ask it like that. Just be like, hey, what are your pronouns again? I'll be like, here again. I'll be like, okay, cool, great. And then if someone forgets, I'll be like, oh, it's they, them. And they'll be like, oh, sorry. And I'll be like, it's no big deal. I forget people's pronouns all the fucking time. Yeah. I am not perfect. It's fine.
Yeah.
I just need people to be chill about it. Like, because I just can't deal with that level of like anxiety in my life. I already have enough of it. Like, please don't be anxious about asking me a very simple, easy question.
Uh-huh. How much responsibility do you think should be put on others to ask that question, or for non-binary people to tell people their pronouns?
I feel like responsibility is a strong word for like what that is. I'm like, girl, it's so easy. Just be like, oh, so what are your pronouns again? Okay, great. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, it's not like some big burden that you're carrying by being a decent human being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like in the same way that if you forgot someone's name or aren't sure of someone's name, you're just going to ask them.
Mm-hmm.
So like, if you forget someone's pronouns or you don't know, just ask them. It's not like you're doing this big social justice work by doing that. You're literally just being a competent person.
Yeah. This question is the first one that I ask in every single interview.
Of course.
And it's all just to let people know that it's the easiest question to ask and like the most respectful one you can give to people who are non-binary.
Yeah. And it's like chill, but also necessary.
But when I first started the project, I mean, I was one of those people that was like, oh, should I? I mean, they say exactly what you were saying. How should I do? Is it okay? Can I do it this? And is it? So you said you use they, them pronouns. Are there any instances where you currently use other pronouns?
Oh yeah. No, there are certain people in my life that get exceptions or get free passes. Sometimes with friends, we'll use like she and her, but that's just for fun. And then some people in my life, there's a very small group of people in my life who I let use he pronouns who like I'm fine with, you know? Because there are certain people where I'm like, we've known each other for literally forever. You've known me for like my entire life. And this, at the end of the day, like I think it is important to remember that like pronouns are just words, you know? And like words have power. I'm not saying words don't have power. I'm an author. I know words have power and words can get you money. but I think it's really important to remember that like, that words are something that's layered on top of and built on intention. And mm-hmm. intention is so much more important than the actual words.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So like, let's say I'm having dinner with like some 80-year-old cute ass, brilliant ass queer granny. And like, you know, and she's like, oh, Jacob's so great. I love him. And I'm sitting there in like my little cute tulip print dress or whatever, like in my hair all done and like with some, you know, like a cute red lip. And then, you know, someone's using he pronouns, but in the most loving, affectionate, sweet way. Like, am I going to go out of my way to correct that person in that moment? Like, no, girl, I don't care about it like that. That this thing is complicated. Intention is so much more important than the actual words, you know? And so like, will I maybe afterwards, like one be like, oh, hey, just by the way, like I do use they, them pronouns, but it's totally fine. Like mm-hmm. I might, mm-hmm. but am I going to be like, I need to correct you. I'm like, no, you're a sweet ass granny who's loving on me.
Yeah. So you did state at the beginning how you define yourself away from pronouns.
Yeah.
Can you say all that again, please?
I mean, I love like 3,000 words around gender, right? Like I feel like, you know, I don't want, you know, have you ever built a Google form? Like you can, there's like so many different question types, right? And you can choose like, okay, like this is a yes or no. You can choose like, this is a multiple choice. You can choose like, this is a check boxes where you can check as many as you want. You can choose like short form response where it's like a short little bit, like mm-hmm. for like a sentence,
mm-hmm.
or you can choose paragraph response. And I'm like, I think what is your gender should always be a paragraph response.
Yeah.
Like I don't like the idea. Because to me, gender is something spiritual. It's a mythology. It's a religion, right? It's a way that we understand ourselves on a really deep human level. And so when you're asking about someone's gender, you're asking about so much more than just like this arbitrary set of words, you know? And I don't like the idea that anyone has a simple gender, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's not a cis man in the world who has a simple gender. There's not a cis woman in the world whose gender is simple. Gender isn't simple because people aren't simple. you know? So all that being said, I list like, I have so many different words that I love because I feel like I'm one of those like layer cakes with the really thin little layers, you know?
Those are good ones.
Yeah. They're the best. They're delicious because they have more icing per cake slice than like normal, you know? Like the more layers of cake you have, the more icing you have between the layers. And that's what everyone's trying to
there
eat anyway.
Go. Yeah.
So for me, it's like, I love the term genderqueer. I love the term non-binary. I am absolutely and proudly a member of the trans community. But on the same level, like, I don't not think of myself as a gay man. I don't disidentify from gay manhood or using the term gay, because I feel such a connection and a sisterhood / brotherhood with gay men, you know. I understand myself as like queer in a very general sense. I'm also a gender unicorn. I'm a gender witch. You know, some days I'm a gender messiah when I'm really preaching, you know, like I got all these layers and all these ways I want to describe it.
So tell me a bit more about your gender journey. When did you first start questioning gender?
Oh, I mean, I always questioned gender, like as a kid. I mean, it wasn't even for me. My first understanding of what gender was that gender was just shame, was just a process of shaming people into doing what they're supposed to do. You know, like, cause when I was a child, I was just so effortless in my body and so effortless in what I wanted to do and just exploding with expression everywhere. My first understanding of gender was like as this tool that just said half of what you want to do is wrong and you can't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this gender thing sucks. It's so stupid. And it's everyone who gets shamed for their gender, right? Like every child on this planet. Well, not every child on this planet, because there are cultures.
Yeah.
There are still indigenous cultures in this world. There are still other cultures that have not been, you know, subject to white Western imperial colonization, because that's what the gender binary is. But there are cultures that still have traditions that are much more open and much more empathetic towards children about gender. But I think at least in like white Western culture, you know, in sort of American culture, you know, we like everyone is shamed for their gender at the earliest of ages, you know, like even people who identify as like cis men or cis women, like they are inundated with shame and gender policing. There is no person on this planet who has been subjected to the gender binary. Granted, not everyone has, and thank God. But for everyone who's been subjected to the gender binary, we all have baggage from it, you know?
So how long have you been using they, them pronouns?
I started using they, them pronouns in college, but only at like queer conferences and queer events and stuff. I didn't like bring them into my life and kind of professionally and fully until probably right around like senior year of college, my first year out of college, when I was sort of like, no, this is a thing that's like happening all the time and everyone needs to be good about it most of the time.
Do you ever feel that as a leader in the community that you do have to like up it just because that's what you're trying to express and advocate?
I'm learning to be like, I'm allowed to not be high femme. I don't owe it to anybody in my entire life to be high femme at any given time in order to keep quote unquote my right to be a feminine person. Because I think that expectation is so damaging. The idea that your gender must be consistent in order for you to have the right to express it. I don't owe it to you to put on lipstick in order to have the right to wear lipstick on any day I please.
Right.
You know, I don't owe it to you to wear eyeliner. I don't suddenly lose the right to wear eyeliner or to wear dresses or whatever because I didn't wear eyeliner or a dress for one day.
Yeah.
You know, right. Like I'm a human person and I don't have to be some symbol for anybody.
Yes. I'm sure there's a lot of examples. Maybe there's one extravagant one where someone... where someone did validate your gender.
God, I mean, even just yesterday, I had this incredible meeting where I was meeting with some creative executives, and two of them were gay guys, and one was a cisgender woman, and we had and I feel like throughout the course of the meeting, we just related to we found all these beautiful ways to relate to each other. And there was a moment where the cisgender woman in the meeting was like, "Well, I can't really understand your experience," and we're like, "Or I don't share your experience, but I'm really excited to like work with you on something." Uh-huh. And I was like, "No, like you can totally understand my experience. Like we both navigate the world as feminine people, and feminine people are treated like garbage. Like high femmes are really treated like shit. Mm-hmm. You know, the ways in which you're treated like shit are very similar to the ways that I'm treated like shit. You know, like we don't have this big disconnect here." And she was like, "Oh my God, you're right." And I was like, "Yeah, like we're in this together in this deep way." And that felt really powerful and affirming for me.
How can people make the world a better place for trans and non-binary people away from just respecting their pronouns?
I mean, the biggest thing you can do is understand that we're not that far away from you, and not, and I mean that in a spiritual level, right? That like, that even cisgender people know what having your gender policed feels like, you know? And like, not thinking about like, oh, I'm over here and trans people are over there, but thinking, wow, trans people are on the same continuum as I am, and we all have gender trauma, and I need to heal from my gender trauma. And the reason that the trans community is so beautiful is because it is a community of people who are doing that publicly for the world to see, you know? And I'm so grateful for the trans people because of that, because they're helping me find healing too. And so that's why I'm supporting the trans community, is not because I'm like some, you know, some really good person who's just like, you know, supporting some of these other people who are totally different from me, but because I understand as a cis person the ways in which trans people and the empowerment of trans people fundamentally empowers me, you know?
Do you feel that race plays into gender identity and acceptance of someone's gender?
Oh my God, totally, of course. And I mean, I think, you know, the biggest thing about race is that the gender binary is a white thing. Like, it was started in white Western culture and then exported via colonization across the world, right? Like, cultures around the world had totally different understandings of gender than we did, and totally different modes of cultural dress that may have had gender embedded in them, but certainly not in the way that we understand it, right? The idea of a flowy garment being necessarily feminine is such a white Western thing, you know? So whiteness and the gender binary, like, are the same, like, it's all one force that we're trying to fight, mm-hmm. you know? Fighting against the gender binary is also fighting against white supremacy and against a world that uses only a white Western lens of gender. And then, you know, on a more granular level, like, of course, how you experience the world ethnically and racially, you know, it informs how you experience your gender. Like, that's just how people work.
What advice do you have for youth who might be questioning their gender?
I mean, don't, I think the biggest advice is actually just don't pressure. You're under no deadline. Take your time, sweetie. I feel like, you know, there's this idea that you have to come out and you owe it to the world to figure out your gender as fast as you can. And if you don't, you're not courageous. Take all the time in the world you need. Come out as slowly or as quickly as you want to. Do whatever feels right for you.
What advice do you have for parents who might have children who are questioning their gender?
You just got to let your kid lead. You know, like, you can't, trying to steer your kid's gender is just, it never works. It backfires half the time. And it doesn't help your kid's mental health or emotional development. Like, if your kid wants something or wants to do something, or, and it doesn't feel like something that's appropriate for their gender or whatever, like, that's not, if you try and police that, if you try and tell them that they can't do that, all you're doing, like, I mean, all you're doing is hurting your child. You're not protecting them.
Is there anything else you would like to say to everyone listening?
Just that, you know, you should go out and fuck with your gender today. Just try something new.
I like that.
Try something new every single goddamn day.
Jacob, thank you so much for being here.
Of course.
We finally made it happen here in Los Angeles.
We did it. She did it. We did it.
Did you know the best place to view the project is through the website, theythemproject.org? It's the only place you can see all the photos and videos and easily share the project to help it be seen and make a difference. In addition to the website, They Them Project is everywhere. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes and Google Play. Remember that the project grows and informs only when it is shared by people like you. Go to theythemproject.org and share what you see and hear.